Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Mike Caliendo comes in as an extra blocker. This is third down and one. At the two-yard line, a touchdown, walks it off. Hand off, Kareem Hunt, right side, powering. He is. Give it to him. Touchdown, Kansas City. It's a walk-off touchdown by Kareem Hunt. And the Kansas City Chiefs stay undefeated at 8-0. The only unbeaten team in the National Football League. 14 straight wins for the Chiefs Kingdom. That's an all-time Kansas City record and seventh in National Football League history.
Mitch Holthus on the call, of course, late last night right here on 96.5 The Fan out at Arrowhead. The overtime win and a perfect season continues for the Kansas City Chiefs.
No big deal.
No big deal. No, not stressful at all. No, not up and down at all.
Man, I was looking for a stress-free game last night.
No mistakes or anything. No crunch time moments. No interesting decisions. Nothing.
No additional quarter needed.
No, didn't have anything like that. No. What, I mean, honestly, one of the crazier games of the entire season, if you factor in everything, not just trailing and then the Chiefs, of course, playing overtime game, but a moment where I think everybody in Kansas City, of course, for at least a brief second, thought that perhaps this season was going to end last night based off of the injury to one.
Yeah,
Patrick
for
Mahomes.
One minute, I thought, well, season over.
I had not felt that
That'll
way.
That'll be the whole show tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah, like, fortunately, we can laugh about it because clearly Mahomes also was laughing about on the sideline, came back in and was fine and played great last night. But on the touchdown pass that he had, where we all saw the help that he needed to get off the field, I hadn't felt that way since the Broncos game, where we all know many years ago now, the dislocated kneecap. And that moment when that game, I remember thinking, oh, this is it. This season's over. That's how we all felt in that Broncos game. And for, 30 seconds, 60 seconds that maybe last night, that was the way I felt. It was different than even the Jags playoff game where Mahomes had the ankle injury. And you're like, oh boy, not in this moment. Like, that was a bad feeling, but it was already the playoffs and it wasn't this.
You thought if he could play, he would play.
This feeling last night for a little bit was much like that Denver one where I honestly thought for 60 seconds that, oh, it's over. Carson Wentz is going to have to take this team to the Super Bowl.
That's, and I honestly had no confidence in that. Not a knock on Carson Wentz. I was like, oh man, here we go. And it just like, we're just stuck and there's no choice and everything's kind of a wash. And it was like, but it didn't have to go down like that. Apparently he was fine. Fooled us, Gold, at least on that end. And then we all came back down to earth, which was, here's the Chiefs winning again. Another close game, maybe closer than you thought it should have been against the Bucks. Although I give Baker Mayfield a pretty good amount of credit for the fight he continues to show at quarterback. And I said, one way or the other, what's next for this team? And it was like, just another win. I mean, honest to God, Kareem Hunt, DeAndre Hopkins, Patrick Mahomes, when they need, I think the perfect way to describe it, I think it was Jeff Schwartz or whatever. It's like, when this team needs to score, like when they need a moment, okay, we'll turn it on. It's at 17-10. Boy, we need this drive pretty bad. What should we do? 10 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. Oh, we need this play again. What should we do? 10 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. 70 yards, touchdown. You're like, my God. Is this just the second you need it? You just go back-to-back 10-play touchdown drives?
It's the switch we've talked about even last year and heck, the prior season. Like, they have the ability to flip a switch when it matters most, and they are truly unfazed by the pressure-packed moments. There is not a team in football that is better prepared when their backs are against the wall. We have just seen it way too often whether it's the defense at times last night, what they didn't make the play down the stretch that we usually see them make. So last night it was the offense that made the plays down the stretch. But whether it's special teams and you need a big bunker kick, or it's the defense needing a goal line stand against the Raiders, or earlier in the year, a fourth down against the Falcons. Last night, the two drives you referenced, obviously the game-winning overtime drive capped off by the Kareem Hunt touchdown, they make the one play or the sequence of plays that are necessary to win, and that's why they're 8-0. That's why it's Scott Van Pelt said it well last night too, Cody, in postgame on ESPN, and he was like, you know, they're unbeaten, yet they don't look unbeatable, yet they're unbeatable. You know, like, yeah. they don't look like an unbeatable team when you watch the game last night. If you had not
but
watched,
yet you can't beat them.
Yeah, like, yeah. If you had not watched any football the last 5 years, and you hadn't watched any football this year until last night, you would have watched the Chiefs and been like, yeah, this teams can beat them. But yet, no, they're unbeatable because they make the crucial play at the crucial time. And also, I'd be a little nervous if I was the rest of the league. Patrick Mahomes. We were going through his numbers last week. We were saying, hey, I don't know when the stretch is going to come, but if you look even last year, there's going to be a stretch of 3 or 4 games where all of a sudden he has like 9 touchdowns and 1 pick, or 9 touchdowns and no picks.
Three touchdowns and no picks.
And I wonder if last night was the start of that, because that was his best performance actually of the entire season.
Yeah, it was. By far. I mean, he looked comfortable. The only complaint you could even make is, well, maybe he got sacked a few too many times. Do I care if it's a 300-yard, 3-touchdown, no interception performance? Sometimes you get hit. Vita Vea had a nice game, right? So you got to deal with that end of things sometimes, and then, you know, figure it out from there. Outside of that, do I actually care? Nah, I'm good. I'm fine. I can live my life. I don't know what it is, but it's just when you go through and look at what the Chiefs consistently do, how they consistently win, the close scoring stuff does not bother me. It just doesn't. You know why? Because all they do is win. All they do is win. No part of it changes. Nothing looks any different. Sometimes is it frustrating or ugly? Yeah, sometimes it is. Yesterday, I would argue that the offense was never particularly ugly, except for two weirdo plays. They tried to hand the ball off to a wide receiver, and when they tried to soft touch a pass to a wide receiver. Weren't those the only two plays that just didn't go all that well? The rest look like a fine-oiled machine. That was the first time. We looked this up, remember, not that long ago. Do you know how long it's been since the Chiefs scored 30 points? Been a long...
I think it was the Bears game.
Yeah, been a long time.
Bears game last year.
Over a year, the last time they scored 30 points. I know it took overtime, but I'm not here to complain about that performance last night. I don't know what it is about this team, man. They just know. It's probably just back-to-back Super Bowls and all this other stuff, Mahomes. They just know how to win. They've lost pieces. We can go back to all that stuff. They just bring in DeAndre Hopkins, and then it just looks like they're old pals. Nothing matters, man. Nothing shakes them. Nothing rattles them. Defense finally fails one time, which we can get to later. They just go down and score a touchdown. All of it feels about the same. It does feel like Groundhog Day. Every game feels the same. You agree with that, right? You and I, before the show, we were joking because we got to do a video thing where it's like we got to give a prediction for the score. And I think you chose like 26-18 or whatever yesterday.
Yeah.
The reason why we joke about it is every single Chiefs game is exactly the same. The opposing team has between 13 and 21 points. Typically, I know yesterday the Bucs got a few more. The opponent has between 13 and 21 points, and the Chiefs have between 21 and 28. That's pretty much every Chiefs game. This one was a touchdown better on both sides, but felt exactly the same. Binkley had pointed out to me, and I think it's correct too, they're now one game away from the longest consecutive streak of holding an opponent under 28 points. So can I even be that mad at the defense? No. This just is a classic Chiefs win gold. No more, no less.
Yeah, I mean, they continue to win in this fashion, and it should be fun. This should be a fun ride and all. Like, I understand last night was stressful when you factor in the injury and everything, but once again, step back and realize this is an 8-0 football team. This is a team that has won 14 straight games and is pacing to go make history, whether it is three-peating, whether it is a perfect season. And I know that seems silly after last night, and you're like, oh, they're gonna slip up because they almost lost to the Bucks. But that's the whole point, is it feels like they're gonna slip up every week, and they don't. It doesn't matter. Like, they have to be the most frustrating team to play in the NFL right now, not only because you know they're on top, but if you're the Bucks, you felt like you had them. The Bucks played good enough. You know, you would like to say to win that game if you were a Tampa Bay fan. You're like, you felt like you played good enough. And then we'll get to it. Your head coach also didn't help you late. I couldn't believe they didn't go for two. We'll get to that decision. The reason why I feel better today about this football team than I did 24 hours ago, even in a game in which Mahomes messes up his ankle and all of that, DeAndre Hopkins looks like the old DeAndre Hopkins. Any bit of this concern, like, oh, you know what? He's got this knee problem, or that was a year ago that he had 1,000 yards. It turns out that when Will Levis was your quarterback, that might hamper your performance. And when you have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid involved in your offense, they're going to get you the ball. We saw the uptick in production. We thought we would see it based off a snap count. He had 60% of the snaps last night, and that got them 8 for 86 and 2 touchdowns, including one unbelievable catch in triple team coverage that he only makes that catch. Even if Rashee Rice was healthy, I don't care. Rashee Rice is not catching that football. Nobody else on this team, period, is catching that football. It was a great throw in triple coverage. Perfect. But DeAndre Hopkins, considering the vision that's needed to catch the football, to track the football, nobody else is making that grab. Have to feel even better about the trajectory of this offense long-term because of what DeAndre Hopkins has done. This was still only the second game with him in a Chiefs uniform. Him and Patrick Mahomes already have this connection going, man. And last night, 8 for 86, 2 touchdowns. Can't ask for anything more from DeAndre Hopkins. He was awesome last night.
I guess what really surprised me about it is they've been together for like 10 days. I don't know, 10 days, right? Roughly, they've been teammates. I haven't seen Mahomes throw a pass to a receiver with that level of trust since Tyreek Hill left. But you guys have known each other for like 10 days. It's like the shotgun wedding. Gold, maybe when you find the one, you guys are just married in 6 months. I'm like, damn, that went quick, Gold.
Shotgun wedding.
Well, it just like they decided from the second they knew each other, they're like, you know what? We're in. We like this. And it works. And I'm comfortable and you're comfortable because that throw shouldn't be downgraded either. That throw was into triple coverage. Only, I don't know, inside of a 2-foot box is probably where that pass could have been thrown. And he made that completion. But yeah, DeAndre Hopkins is the goods. He had a single touchdown in 6 games for the Titans this year. He had 2 in the game last night. And he had 86 yards last night. And he was the leading wide receiver immediately for this team. And he looks great. And he did the Remember the Titans dance, which is
perfect.
He claimed wasn't a stab at them, but it doesn't really matter.
He said he was actually honoring them and respecting them. I actually believe him on that one.
I mean, he said
he's spoken very highly on the staff that traded him to Kansas City at the time. Like, he appreciated that they traded him to Kansas City and not some terrible team or whatever. They traded with a team, might get his first ring as an NFL player, and he has to be thrilled with the early return on him coming to Kansas City. The Chiefs obviously have to be thrilled with the early return on their investment, the conditional pick that could be a fourth rounder, who cares, based off of the production they're already getting from him. Guys, he was targeted 9 times. That gives you an idea of where things are trending. For 9 targets for him. Travis is out here getting targeted like 16 times in the game. The offense rolls through those two.
Great.
It was incredible to watch last night. It really was. And now, if you think about the long-term future of this season, eventually Juju's back in the mix too. I'll be curious to see how they fit him in this whole thing. Maybe late in the season, Hollywood Brown somehow is a bit of a role. I'm just saying, like, you can get excited, I think, about what suddenly this offense could be later on in the season.
What we were worried about, once they lost their number one and number two wide receivers, are they going to be able to get enough offense to make a difference, right? We knew that their defense could play and their defense could keep them in games, but could they get DeAndre Hopkins Gold, we thought, acclimated by playoff time? I would say that we were pretty optimistic when we were talking about DeAndre Hopkins. I said I wanted like 4 catches for 60 yards. Wasn't sure if he'd get in the end zone, but you know, just somewhere in that end is what I was looking for. He exceeded even, I would say, like the people that I'm like, okay, a little pie in the sky there. If somebody yesterday had told me he was going to finish with 8 catches for 86 yards and 2 touchdowns, I'd be like, relax. Okay? Relax a little. Nobody needs to get carried away here. It is only game 2. No,
Yeah, 35-yard reception, obviously, was the...
Two touchdowns, right?
Yeah, yeah. Two touchdowns. Obviously, both were critical in a game like that. Every single one mattered. It was awesome to see, and that's why I'm most excited coming out of the game. I mean, there's a lot of other moments in the game, some performances that you could say were worrisome, others that were really impressive, but there's nothing that should excite you more other than just winning the football game than what DeAndre Hopkins looked like. Somehow, the NFL traded DeAndre Hopkins midseason to the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, if I'm a Bills fan or a Ravens fan and I watched last night's game, one, you're saying, of course, they won in overtime. The other thing you're saying is, oh, boy, they actually got him another number one wide receiver again in Kansas City.
Yeah, if I were the rest of the NFL, I'd just be pissed. Like, Jonathan Mingo got traded today for a fourth-round pick. That's what the Chiefs gave up from DeAndre Hopkins if they go to the Super Bowl. You're like, why did you let them do this to you? There were 1,000 wide receivers available. Anybody else could have targeted DeAndre Hopkins, and you let the Chiefs go out there and get him for a fifth, maybe a fourth, depending on how far they go into the season if DeAndre Hopkins continues to play at this level. But, and look, I had doubts about if old DeAndre Hopkins was still available, right? Like, okay, you know, what level of peak could we get? I just needed a stable wide receiver. That's what I thought the Chiefs needed.
Yeah.
Stability. Now, even if you factor in the first game in which he played 40% of the snaps because he had just gotten in there, he's averaging 60 yards a game and a touchdown a game over two games for Kansas City. It was the perfect signing. It's just like Mahomes is a different player when he has a wide receiver he trusts.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Drew, you got your first time at Arrowhead. You got to see overtime, right?
You didn't go last night.
You did. I'm not going, huh?
I did not go. I watched the game at home with my wife.
I was concerned for your mental health. It looked like you were watching college basketball last night.
During Monday Night Football, you were watching college basketball on November 4th.
I think it was right before Monday Night Football.
Let me give you the setup. I was watching college basketball before the game started.
Mm-hmm.
Then I turned to the TV. The big TV had on the Chiefs game the entire time. On my phone, I was checking in on the Ohio State-Texas college basketball game, yes, and my Wisconsin Badgers.
I have a feeling in Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Buffalo, there was no blue chew needed for about 60 seconds when Mahomes was hobbling off the field. And then there was no worry to call a doctor because it was lasting too long. That ended very quickly once you guys saw Mahomes back on the field.
If any fan is like excited because people get hurt, that I feel really... I hope your life gets a little bit better. I would agree. Because as soon as that happened, I felt bad because I didn't think that it almost looked like his leg just wanted to hyperextend, but it buckled instead. It definitely did not.
Lately,
it looked really awkward. I was hoping he'd be all right.
My initial fear was like they were going to zoom in on the Achilles, like they were going to zoom
in.
Yeah, like,
you're going to see that.
Don't zoom in. Like I don't. I mean, you thought it was like done, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah,
like,
my phone blew up.
I'm not going to try to pretend. Like, I definitely was like, oh.
Anytime it's a non-contact, the first thing you think of is the worst thing, of course.
As I said, like, that feeling was the same feeling I had in the Broncos game many years ago with the dislocated kneecap. That was the same exact feeling I had, and that's the only other time. These are the two times in Mahomes' career when he's been, and he's been hurt before, obviously. But the other ones are like, you knew he might be hurt, but like you weren't worried it was a season ender.
Yeah.
This one at first, and then of course the Broncos one, both felt like seasons were over. And fortunately, that was not the case. This is even what Patrick Mahomes had to say on the injury of that particular play.
I was obviously running for the goal line, was about kind of committed to running the football, and at the last second saw Samaje, and so kind of awkwardly rolled the ankle a little bit. Definitely scary. I think it hurt more just because it's the same ankle I rolled last week. So it scared me a little bit, but once I kind of took my breath and kind of calmed down a little bit, ended up being not too bad. We were able to go in there, kind of get the respat, and go back on the football field.
I mean, it was a terrifying moment. I did see. I'll give Andy Reid this. This was probably the comment of the night on it.
You know, that was I wasn't sure exactly where he was going to be with it, but he might have the loosest ankles in America.
I don't know what that means, but it actually feels true. Like all the he spends his entire offseason doing like flexibility training and all this crazy stuff that eventually leads goal to him being this type of player. But, greatness can change those things. Like DeAndre Hopkins, when he had 1,000 yards last year, that was 1,000 yards going through the motions. We've all had jobs, parts of our lives, things where we're just doing it to do it. We're just, kind of getting through it, whatever. It's a mandatory thing. Mm-hmm. Here we go. That was his 1,000 yards last year. I mean, it's motivated. Team's 8-0. He went from one of the five worst teams in the NFL to the best team in the NFL overnight, And now, this will only help him, by the way, because now he gets an immediate taste of, oh, I can be great in this offense again. I can feel like 28-year-old DeAndre Hopkins again. I don't know if he'll do this every week, obviously, but like he can feel that way for a moment that like I'm an unstoppable force now. Mahomes throwing me the ball, I'm feeling young again, all that.
My hope is, too, that he actually helps Xavier Worthy become just a better receiver as well. You know, that's...
Yeah, he needs...
He just
looks like a rookie.
And I know that's Juju all. Smith-Schuster's in the room as well, and he's obviously a veteran that can help. But I really think if you're Xavier Worthy, you talk about a player that, like, you can respect, and obviously you can lean on to pick his brain a little bit. I think DeAndre Hopkins is a great person to have in the receiver room to help, whether it's this year worthy or obviously later on in his career. But it would not surprise me at some point this season or next year, and Worthy has a big game and people are asking, you know, how much did you learn from D-Hop or whatever, and he doesn't have extremely high praise. I think that'll probably be the story eventually for Worthy, who we'll get to him a little bit later. It was a rough night for him. Some mistakes, obviously, just didn't have a good feel of the boundaries of the football field. Otherwise, this game maybe is a little bit less of a sweat. But D-Hop is the biggest reason why you should be feeling good. The other reason that this game turned in overtime, and you saw Baker Mayfield's reaction to the coin toss, he knew right away Mahomes was going to march the Chiefs down.
That's a great reaction to this.
Todd Bowles, who has done a very nice job in Tampa. Right now, he's dealing with a ton of injuries as well. They were on the road in a position to win a football game against an unbeaten team, and yet they don't go for two. The Chiefs' defense was worn out. It was a really physical game. Backs against their wall. The Bucs were moving the football, and for whatever reason, I was stunned. I really was stunned that Todd Bowles decided to just kick the extra point and roll the dice, one, because he left time for Mahomes in regulation, and then two, you were banking on a coin toss. This isn't playoff over, you know, this isn't playoff overtime rules. If the Chiefs march down and get a touchdown, the game's over. And of course, the Chiefs win the coin toss, and Baker knew it. It was done. I could not believe that from Todd Bowles, and his explanation, guys, was even worse. Listen to this.
Very minor. We wanted to get it to overtime with the wet conditions on the field. We felt like we had to go in overtime instead of go for two. So we had our shots. We lost the game.
He said the wet conditions on the field is one of the reasons why he didn't go for two. What, the field was going to magically dry in overtime? You just marched down the field in wet conditions. You couldn't get a, what would it have been, a 5-yard touch, 2-point conversion?
A 3-yard or whatever.
Whatever it is, yeah. It made no sense. I don't know what the real argument would be. On the road, you're going up against an undefeated team. You're shorthanded at wide receiver. What, I know, and you have Patrick Mahomes on the other side of the field. That has to matter.
I don't, like, look, I'm not an NFL owner, and I would have to be careful if I were, obviously, in this case, because stuff like this would make me want to fire someone. You are allowed to make a mistake, but when everyone points out that what you did was stupid, then just say it was stupid, and I will do something different the next time. This is, look, I was trying to boil this down because somebody was, like, legitimately asked me, like, why is it a better decision to go for two? Okay, I'll give you the simple math on it. Going for two over the last 5 years in the NFL has a success rate of around 55%. Oh, league-wide. So whether you're good or bad at it, you got a 50-50 shot right then to win a football game. It's over. Now, I get it. Patrick Mahomes still got 27 seconds in the case where they punt it on fourth and one. He gets to go for it. Right. Maybe he gets it. But for the most part, you win a game by going for two. That's it. One decision, one play, one success. That's the only variable you have to get right. By kicking the field goal, here are the variables at play now. Do you win a coin toss or not? 50-50. Actually, less already, by the way, than the 50-50 mm-hmm. shot. If you win that coin toss, can you still go 70 yards to get a touchdown? If you can't get a touchdown, can you prevent a team from scoring a field goal? If you lose the toss, can you prevent it from scoring a touchdown?
Yeah, we got it.
It's like, et cetera, right? The list goes on and on and on. You introduce 10,000 variables, whatever the exponent is on the number of times you have to screw this up or could screw this up, are infinite versus just get 1 2-yard play. It makes no sense to me. It's idiotic when coaches do this. It makes zero, especially on the road, especially in your position, especially against an undefeated team. All that just factors in.
The big outlier is also, you mentioned, you know, you have just as much of a chance as the coin toss. You don't have any control over the coin toss. You have a 50-50 shot in which you have the ball. You're in control of that one play, and you're the underdog. I mean, I don't know what the NFC playoff race is or whatever, but you're trying to win a game and keep yourself in contention amidst not having Chris Godwin, not having Mike Evans, and all of those things. You got to go for two.
Yeah, you had your shot and you refused to take it. You had your shot there to prevent overtime, and you just didn't take it. I mean, all the circumstances pointed to them going for two there, and it mind-boggling. Honestly, the Chiefs got a break. The Chiefs got a massive break that the Bucks did. And I know it's not 100% guaranteed the Bucks were going to get the two-point conversion, but I'll tell you what, I know. And look, I mean, Andy was asked, was he surprised that Todd Bowles didn't go for two?
No. But I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah.
I don't like to hear that from a coach. I'm glad he didn't.
Somebody told me last night. The Chiefs defense was on their heels at that point.
Someone told me last night that Todd Bowles is as old school as it gets, and he was never going to go for two. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Then fire him. Like, yeah. I'm just sorry. I don't like using Excel. Like, well, that's the job, dummy. Like, you have to use it.
Well,
times change. I don't want to use a computer. Do it on a hand calculator.
The Chiefs offense woke up and started running the ball way more, and they were getting 5 yards a pop every single carry. There, as soon as the Chiefs won that toss, the game was over.
913-586-7965. Someone from the 816 also brings up the mistake prior to that. It's fair in terms of time and clock management. That also, when they got the ball down to the 2 yard line, the Bucks are who called a timeout immediately.
The Chiefs should have been taken
down. Yeah, I mean, so they just bad clock management. The Chiefs were fortunate with what the Bucks did in that sequence, whether it was not going for two and also calling that timeout. The Bucks could have truly drained that thing down to 5 seconds and gone for two, and that would have decided that literally the one play would have been the game. So you could have taken out the equation of, well, if we go for two and even if we get it, Mahomes still has time to march down for a field goal. You could have eliminated that sequence, make the Chiefs call their timeout, or just run the clock yourself down to 10 seconds before snapping the ball. It was botched. This is, again, why Andy Reid at times obviously makes mistakes too, but this is why the Chiefs continue to be undefeated and other teams struggle. Teams overthink it. Teams make bad decisions. They don't make the crucial decision, the right decision in the right moment. We can be critical of Andy at times being too aggressive, not aggressive enough, getting too cute.
But when
they need the play, though, and the players have to execute it, but when they need the play, he usually is on his you-know-what. Right, he's able to figure it out. Yeah.
When you even played the Bulls said we were playing for overtime. Loser behavior as an underdog. That is loser behavior.
Say, I just like the second they did that, I'm like, they're losing this game. Losers do. Like, I mean, that's exactly
awful
what it
decision.
Is. What are you doing? We got to play for overtime because it's rainy. It was over. Over.
You were playing in wet conditions all night. Like, it didn't just start raining. You were playing in wet conditions all night, and you had just driven the ball down the field against the defense. And yeah, they were worn out.
I will say, going undefeated in this season, and which the Chiefs might not still do, who knows. They're 8-0 now, so they're at least halfway through it. When I think I view it a little bit like a no-hitter in the sense that, like, some defensive play has to go your way. Some idiot's got to do the, I'm not going for two, I could take this thing away from you a couple of times in the year. A couple of balls have to bounce your way over the course of a calendar year in order for it to work. So thanks, Todd Bowles. I appreciate you helping the Chiefs remain undefeated.
Yeah, maybe when they play the Steelers later in the year, Mike Tomlin, first touchdown of the game, maybe he'll go for two right away out of the gate. Something like that. Wouldn't surprise me, actually. Usually, you know, we see teams be overly aggressive against Kansas City.
I know, that's weird.
Todd Bowles, Drew said it. He's old school. And that's not going to work in 2024. You have to adapt.
That's like the last thing I want to hear about a coach, by the way. Big Chiefs are a guy. He's kind of old school. Pass. I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not.
That's like hiring the defensive-minded guy as the head coach, essentially.
Yeah. There you go.
Just a terrifying sentence.
We'll talk about this game, of course, throughout the entire day. It's a Victory Tuesday in Kansas City. Up next, our NFL insider. We'll see what Vinny Pasquantino made of that performance last night. We'll also discuss his Jets a little bit, too, who probably feel a little bit better after the win last week.
He's had songs written about him without asking for it.
Pasquantino, I want it. Now it's time for Pasquantino.
Mythological creatures and sandwiches have been named after him.
Beefy and Italian.
And he also thought the Devontae Adams trade was going to save the Jets.
Jets.
Welcome back to the show, our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino.
Well, good morning, Vinny Pasquantino, our NFL insider. How we feeling, man? Are you still stateside yet? Are you still overseas?
I am stateside. I got back on Sunday evening. Now I'm just enjoying the next few weeks of peace before start traveling again for wedding season.
Yeah, so this was, my understanding was a bachelor party, right, over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm allowed to say it was Bobby's bachelor party.
Yeah.
I think there were enough players posting about it that we put two and two together.
Yeah, Yeah. So, yeah, it was his bachelor party. It was a lot of fun.
Was Michael Wacha there? We were happy to see him back with the Royals.
Michael Wacha was in Kansas City finishing up a deal that I think everybody should be pretty happy about. So, yeah. Yeah, he was not there, but he was in Kansas City signing pen to paper there, confirming that he'll stay with the Kansas City Royals for at least the next 3 years, hopefully the next 4 years.
Now, I don't know, did you get the, going back to Bobby for a second, I don't know if you were part of, I guess you were, at the bachelor party. We thought it was super cool, the Topps, I guess, baseball cards that were actually asking, or groomsmen gifts, or at least asking to be part of the bachelor party. Did you get one of those?
I did. It was a pretty cool thing that's on my mantle right now. I thought it was a really cool way for a guy who's super into cards like he is. I thought it was a really, special way to ask guys to be a part of his big day. So I do have one.
Vinny, I'm assuming that Bobby kind of lands in the same thing, but we're watching the Chiefs game last night. Andy Reid says that Mahomes has the loosest ankles in the NFL. Do you find that some players just have an additional flexibility to avoid injury in that kind of case? Because for about 60 seconds, I was worried Mahomes was down for the year.
Yeah, so full transparency, I did not see it. I was at a hockey game, so I did not see the injury. I saw the end of the game, but so I saw them like talking about it. But yeah, I think there's just some guys that, I don't know, it feels like have a knack to not have things go wrong. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know what the science would be there, but maybe it's just simple toughness. Like, I don't know how to describe it. There's just a will there for him to be okay. And I'm sure he's in pain. You know, it didn't look like there was the one play where he fell down after, I think it was after he handed the ball off. I'm sure there's some stuff going on, but he's, he definitely seems to be a guy that when things go wrong, he doesn't let it affect anything to the point where you can't tell if anything is seriously wrong or not. So you got to give it to him for that.
I think everybody, including Baker Mayfield, knew what was going to happen once that game went to overtime, though. We're kind of stunned that the Bucs didn't take their shot there, Vinny, and try to go for two.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with the announcers. There was a few things that were confusing there. I don't understand the timeout.
No, that was a bad one.
Because it just feels like 30 seconds or whatever. Like, kudos to the Buccaneers for scoring there and making that, go to overtime. But I don't think anybody saw 27 seconds left on the clock with three timeouts for the Chiefs thinking, like, I was surprised they didn't score at the end of the fourth, to be honest. And then, you see them get the ball to start overtime. It's like, okay, well, it just feels like the game's over. That's just what they do. You can't let them have an opportunity to finish the game on their own accord. And if you give them that opportunity, they're going to take it. And that's why they are who they are, because they do the little things right. If they make mistakes, they can cover up for it later. And they simply just don't make as many mistakes as other teams. They've got better players, and they're just really freaking good.
I think Baker's the perfect example of organizations matter. Like, I'm impressed. They lost their top two wide receivers. He's still out there battling with Patrick Mahomes on the road in a game. I felt like I gave him a ton of credit. I feel like he's kind of underrated still amongst some of the great NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think the word, not to use a word twice, but I think the word is just tough. He's just a good player. The thing about him, right, is he's going to look like he did last night. I think there's some inconsistencies with sometimes he looks fantastic, sometimes he doesn't look fantastic, and that's probably why he's been with a few different teams. It's not anything against him. It's just kind of the truth. Sometimes he throws interceptions that he probably shouldn't. And sometimes, like the last drive last night, he looks like the number one overall pick, where he's just slinging the ball around to Sterling Shepard, and he just looks fantastic. So he kept him in that game last night. I think, that's a tough one for the Bucs to swallow. You've got the Chiefs right there. I think you could say that about like five teams that have played the Chiefs this year, and the Chiefs are just better, and they know how to finish games.
Yeah, that what you just said there is exactly, I think, what most of Kansas City is feeling like here, and maybe most of the NFL, which is that you watch them and there's plenty of moments where you're like, oh, this team is very beatable. And yet, I think, as Scott Van Pelt said, he's like, they're unbeatable, even if they look beatable at times. But and here we are, and they're sitting at 8-0.
Yeah, they do the little things better than everybody else. They block better. They run the football and they stop the run. And even though we're in a new era of football where throwing is king, even though I think it's coming back, like, you can stop the run and you can run it. You're going to have a shot, because you can take time off the clock and you can, keep time in your favor when you can stop the other team from running. So they do the little things really well, like I keep saying, and it's, they're just a tough team to beat. obviously.
We've had a show debate about whether or not which teams to take seriously in the rest of the AFC. So I'd like your opinion. Our producer obviously is a Cincinnati Bengals fan. I think they're fraudulent. Do you still think they're dangerous?
They do little things poorly. Too many penalties, too many big defensive plays. So, yeah, I don't see them. I see it probably as a three-team race in the AFC between the Chiefs, Bills, and Ravens. I think really anybody outside of that doesn't really have a shot, in my personal opinion.
Now, are you going to hear over the next couple weeks, maybe at least from a playoff spot perspective, talk yourself back into your Jets? You got to feel at least better about the situation after that big win last week.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the strongest schedule in the back half of the season. So I think from that end, it gives you some hope that they can go on a little bit of a run, but they need to tighten some things up. And they haven't done that all year, so there's no precedent that they're going to. So if they were to make a run, it would surprise me a little bit, but I could see it happening. But they need to be better in pretty much all facets of the game. And they'll show glimpses of it like they did in the second half against the Texans. And if they continue to play like that, it'll be great. But they've given me no reason to believe that they'll continue to play like that. Doesn't mean they won't, but I have no evidence that they will. So I'm hopeful that they will. Really hopeful that they will. But we'll see what happens.
Maybe, Vinny, for your sake, maybe the Lions can be like, I don't think at any point in my entire life, I was born in 1984. Could you openly say the Lions are one of, if not the best team in the entire NFL right now? They had a long run of bad. Maybe that could be the next thing for the Jets, right? The Lions are the example of how you can come out of the darkness.
Yeah, well, that's they've got a coach that clearly leads that team that everybody buys into. I mean, I'm a big believer in, even if your plan is bad, but everybody believes in it, you've got a shot. In no way am I saying the Lions' plan is bad. I'm just saying that's how I believe in it. And the Lions have so much conviction in what they're doing that they're just a tough team to beat, too, because they believe in everything they're doing. Like, we're going to come hit you in the face, and we'll see how you react to it. Like, we're going to play offense all game long, see how that feels. And they've been able to just beat teams up this year, and it's been really impressive to watch. And, yeah, I'd love it if my team was like that.
You get there one day. I have faith in you.
Thank you.
Like, just remind me again, what age did you become a Jets fan?
I don't remember. It's been my whole life.
Okay. It's the whole
Vinny Testaverde thing.
Yeah. I know that there's like a picture of when I was like 5 or 6 years old wearing a Curtis Martin full outfit, like full uniform for, I don't even think it was Halloween. I'm pretty sure for Christmas, I just wore an entire Curtis Martin uniform.
No, I respect it. I just think that, like, when you look at the organizations that change it, a lot of times it starts with quarterback. I'm assuming that that's why the Jets tried with Aaron Rodgers. It's just harder to draft one. I guess that's what
I disagree. I think a lot of it starts from even higher than that.
Okay.
You have to put people in the right situation, and that's your job as, like, front office, right? You create the culture and the situation for guys to come thrive. And if you're lucky enough, you'll bring in a player that can change it on his own. But for the most part, that starts from the top down. And you can see that with some – Sam Darnold is thriving in Minnesota.
Right.
Nobody would have said that, right? That comes from a culture standpoint of Kevin O'Connell does a great job with him, and they set it up in a really good way. And, you know, situation does matter quite a bit in sports. Now, sometimes, like I said, there's players that can transcend situation. But for the most part, it's all situation-based.
Can the same be said for your fantasy football team? Is the right man in charge? How are we looking?
That's 100% correct. You guys got to want to come to work and want to work for you. So that's why I always try to draft tough-minded individuals on my fantasy team to just make sure that we're in every single game. We might not win every single game, but we're gonna make it tough on our opponents.
Who's having the worst season? If you can just throw out somebody's name, that's part of that fantasy football league.
Garrett Hampson. His team sucks. He's like 1-7 right now. His team is just called Fire Sale, which is a crazy thing to have in a 1 year redraft league. So yeah.
Who's he selling it for?
What are people trading him real cash? What's going on here?
I think he's just tired of his team and he wants new players. But nobody wants his players. He's 1-7.
Does he at least have the injury excuse? Like, did he draft McCaffrey and Pacheco and he just got screwed?
I'm in so many leagues that I have no idea.
Fair enough.
Bad for Garrett.
Yeah.
Seems like a nice guy. You know, I feel bad for his terrible fantasy.
Great guy, and playoff absolute champion for us this year.
No doubt. Hey, Vinny, appreciate it, man. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Yep. See you guys.
There you go. Vinny Pasquantino, our VinFL insider, Sounds like his fantasy football team at least is going well.
He's doing okay. Garrett Hampson's not so much.
That's why I wanted a name. I was like,
Garrett Hampson's 1-7.
Very quick.
His team's named Fire Sale. I'm like, but who's he? It's a redraft league.
Yeah, if it's a keeper league, you understand it. You're trying to load up on some players and all that. But yeah, redraft league, there's not much you're getting by selling.
Your only job when you're a terrible team is to put in a qualified starting lineup.
This is why we do guillotine league too.
Yeah, just keep playing. That's all we ever ask. I only survived by about 10 points this week in guillotine.
It was close. We were asking him about just the rest of the AFC and everything, and particularly like the Jets' strength of schedule wise. They have the fifth easiest schedule the rest of the way. It looks like Kansas City's kind of middle of the pack or so. The toughest schedules remaining in football, if you're wondering, as it how teams that would impact Kansas City. Pittsburgh, third toughest schedule remaining. A lot of it's that division. Broncos, who had the Chiefs twice still. They have the fifth, it looks like, toughest schedule the rest of the way. That's kind of where things stand with some teams that could have an impact perhaps at some point in time for Kansas City. As far as the Bills go, and they're right around Kansas City, straight at the schedule, and that's, of course, a team you're competing with for the number one seed.
Did you hear what he had to say about your team? Said all they do is find ways to lose, man. Just
I was
mistakes.
Seeing if Drew was going to chime in. I was wondering if Drew was going to try to talk Vinny into taking Cincinnati more seriously.
Look, nobody else has to. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can keep on saying that they're not good enough. You keep it. That's fine. I like it this way anyways.
Yeah, no.
It's better this way.
Fair enough.
Being an underdog is more fun sometimes.
It can be. It can. We get that on the baseball end sometimes, right? And that role.
The Bengals have been the underdogs.
Obviously, the Chiefs haven't been a true underdog. I understand in the betting markets they were an underdog to San Francisco and stuff like that. But like, nobody's going to try to make that case for the Chiefs who are on a three-peat campaign. One thing that I think was very evident last night in the football game, there was a moment in the first half, at halftime actually, where the Chiefs had 9 carries for their running backs, majority of them to Kareem Hunt, but also Carson Steele had a carry or two. And I think Xavier Worthy had 1 carry. And that's when the offense was kind of struggling. And they were passing, I think, 22 pass attempts for Mahomes in the first half, and he had a great game. But they were clearly trying to pass the football, and Vita Vea was wrecking the interior of that offensive line. And you and I had put something on the rundown as well at that point in time. And I was like, why are they abandoning the run for them?
At one point, it's like 7 carries for 16 yards and they just stopped giving it.
And I understand, like, some would argue, well, they just didn't have success. I thought they abandoned it too early. Then they got back to it on the first drive, I think, or maybe second drive of the third quarter. And it was 4 straight runs. And I think 5 out of 9 plays were run plays. They got Kareem Hunt going again. Naturally, guess what opened up? Travis Kelce started to get open because they were able to run the football. All of that was complimentary, and Kareem Hunt ends up having a stellar game. You look at his stat line, you would have thought he was running throughout the entire first and second half. It was mainly second half, third quarter yardage for Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
I just think it was a lesson that I know you have Mahomes, and now you got D-Hop, and he was great and all that, but when this offense has been at their best, they've also been running the football. I think it's hopefully it was a bit of a warning, like, don't abandon the run. And I guess ultimately they didn't abandon it because they went back to it in the second half. But it felt like they, for a little while, they were giving up on it too quickly. And I'm glad they got back to it. To me, that's why they won the football game. Well, they got back to it. That's what opened up the passing game again in the second half, because Vita Vea was wrecking them when they were dropping back and passing. 4 sacks in the first half.
I think if you look, yeah, I know. And then they didn't let up another sack the rest of the game. If you look at this, I have never felt better about their situation than where they are right now, because I have watched Andy Reid forget the run a bunch of times. And you know what he normally, he doesn't go back to it, dude. That's it. He just forgets about the run and he tries to pass himself out of a paper bag, right? He does whatever he can to survive just throwing the ball. And sometimes it works. It is certainly worth playing times. This is one of the few times I will say in the entire time I've watched Andy Reid where I watched him turn that back on. They were down. So they were down 17-10, and then they went back to the run. That feels like I never see that under Andy. And again, there aren't a lot of criticisms you can make about him. But one of them, when we were joking earlier this season about the things that just like go with Andy, is that sometimes he forgets about the run. What was crazy is it wasn't effective. I think the reason why they had abandoned it early is they got themselves in some longer second and third downs because they weren't moving the ball very well. But what I was surprised by is normally they keep running on second down and they had just let that go early and then turned it back on. Kareem Hunt ran with more juice in the second half of that game than I think the most since I saw in the first game of his time in Kansas City. That was the most energy and effort I have seen him run with since that very first game back in a Chiefs uniform. He was great. And yeah, I think that is, as much as like Mahomes is great, and that's another huge reason why they won, the Kareem Hunt stuff might have been the single biggest reason why the offense had success in the second half. Built off everything. Every single touchdown drive they had.
The final stat line, that he tied his most carries of the season. He had 27 carries last night for 106 yards in the touchdown, game-winning walk-off touchdown, as we all know, in overtime last night. Against New Orleans, he had 27 carries for 102. So both Monday Night Football games are his two best performances of the season. And we know he doesn't have the breakaway speed anymore, but he had the run for, what was it, 15 yards or so last night.
It was a good run.
Which was, I can't remember, maybe who put it out, but it was like the longest run from a running back the Chiefs have had.
In a year.
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah Pacheco obviously is another tough, hard runner, but usually doesn't have the 20-plus yard runs or anything like that. No, Kareem Hunt's been, I mean, it goes without saying, he has been so important for why they're undefeated, and they... got him off the street, and he has been we said yesterday, the second best running back in a couple metrics in football heading into last night's
efficiency,
game.
It only got better.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 3.9 yards, which isn't the best yards per carry. But
that only went down because of that last drive.
Well,
and a little bit in the early.
First half, he wasn't doing much. Second half, he was awesome. And I just hope that was a wake-up call, though, as well. Though, like, even if it's struggling for a quarter or for a half, you got to get back to it because it changes everything for this offense when they're able to run the football.
Kelsey, Mahomes and DeAndre Hopkins finished with 304, mm-hmm. I think, total yards and 3 touchdowns. Pretty good day.
Yeah.
Pretty good day at the off. Oh, you got it to your three best players, Travis Kelce, DeAndre Hopkins, and Kareem Hunt. Well, good. Good. I can't believe the two of those players weren't even on this team to start the year.
That's what's amazing.
Two of the Chiefs' best offensive weapons didn't even start the year as a Chief. But who cares? One was on the street and the other was available for a fifth, maybe fourth round pick. So it works for me.
Thinking of acquiring players, we know the trade deadline is this afternoon. Adam Schefter is still out there reporting. The Chiefs have had some interest in Marshon Lattimore. Of course, the talented corner down in New Orleans. They've already fired their head coach. A lot of teams are interested in Lattimore. We discussed this yesterday. The challenge here is the financial and not the actual draft compensation, although I guess it's a balance between the two. But this year, financially, not a huge problem. It's the years that are remaining on the contract. He's 28 years old, but there's significant money still remaining on the contract. Not guaranteed money, but still significant money. We're not talking like $6 or $7 million. It's like, what, $14 million, $15 million that we're talking about. That's why I wouldn't do the trade, Cody. I'm all about giving up draft capital, fifth, sixth, seventh round. I'm fine. I don't think the Chiefs should be taking on $16, $17 million next year for Marshon Lattimore.
So I'd entertain it only for the reasons that I've discussed before, which is I'm desperate for the history part of it, three straight championships, what that means for Mahomes, Andy, the franchise, a million other things. So would I consider taking on that weight for that? Yeah. But what I think is happening with the Chiefs, now that they've gotten some of their deals in place, what I think is happening there is they're lowball offering houses at this point. They want the Saints to trade them Marshon Lattimore for not very high draft pick compensation and to keep all the money on their end. Hey, if you don't mind, you know, if you don't have any other calls, the only way they're getting a player as high of the level of interest as Marshon Lattimore is if there's no other team calling. And according to multiple reports, there are plenty of teams calling on Marshon Lattimore. The Chiefs are not going to be the best offer on this one. They were making some calls because they gave Jeff Tredia over at NFL Network, who reported earlier today that they've called several other teams about corners. They're not getting a call back, getting ghosted.
Not a lot of corners available, too.
And that's what it really comes down to. I don't think they're going to be able to buy their way out of their corner issues. I think they're just going to have to develop them and then try to solve some of the corner issues with pass rush, which they did by adding Uche. And ideally, when a Minnehue comes back, they'll be able to continue that. Plus, Karloftis is on a hot streak over the last couple of weeks, etc. I think they're just going to have to cover it that way is the truth. Deadline, I'd entertain it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Deadline 3 o'clock this afternoon. Nate Taylor from The Athletic is going to join us at 1 o'clock today. We'll get his final kind of thoughts on if anything's going to happen. I think it's obvious, though, once again, the Chiefs are definitely trying to make something happen. It doesn't mean a deal's going to come together, but they clearly are involved in discussions. Now, there's been some activity already today. We'll keep you up to date throughout the show. A couple trades have gone down in the last 2-3 hours or so this morning. Za'Darius Smith is now a member of the Detroit Lions. Big deal. We know Aiden Hutchinson is out for the season for Detroit. Dan Campbell was not trying to hide the fact that they were aggressive trying to get a lineman. Za'Darius Smith, no longer with the Browns, now a member of the Detroit Lions. Khalil Herbert, a smaller move here. He's a backup running back in Chicago. The Cincinnati Bengals have traded for him to go with Chase Brown now that Zach Moss is done for the season. And then Jonathan Mingo, former top pick for the Carolina Panthers a couple of years ago, traded from Carolina to the Dallas Cowboys. Not really sure about that trade. Dak Prescott is hurt. I don't really know what's going on there other than Jonathan Mingo. You got a couple of years of control and it's a move for the future, but the future of the Cowboys doesn't look good anyway right now. So three trades already down and it's only 11 o'clock.
I'm sorry. So DeAndre Hopkins, who is a free agent, pending free agent, he costs less than Jonathan Mingo? Wait, just real quick. Their fourth-round pick will be way higher than the Chiefs for starters. Also, they're giving up a guaranteed fourth-round pick, not a contingent fourth-round pick. They gave up more for Jonathan Mingo than the Chiefs did for DeAndre Hopkins?
Oh, I'm with you.
How stupid of a trade is that?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Now, the argument on the other side would just be that Mingo has two more years after this under contract, but he has like 500 yards in his career, and this year has no touchdowns.
He hit a touchdown in his career.
Yeah, so that's the trade just doesn't make sense for if Dak Prescott was still healthy and you just felt like you needed maybe. Cooper Rush is starting for you, Dallas. So like I don't get it. Yeah, it's Jerry Jones.
Like, are they only facing like the Panthers the next like 4 weeks, and they thought maybe they could get some wins? What's the Cowboys schedule looking like?
Don't they have Cincy coming up too?
Yeah.
Eagles this week.
That's a nice break for your Bengals, by the way, to go up against Cooper Rush.
My God, so they think with Cooper for weeks. Nah, he might be back by then because it's a full 5 weeks before they face Cincinnati.
You want some conversation this morning? You're getting it.
Yeah, we are. Thank you, Jerry.
They have the Eagles this week, the Texans next week, the Commanders on the road the week after that. Their schedule stinks.
They're in trouble. What
the hell they trade for Jonathan Mingo for?
You think I'm an idiot?
Yes, Jerry.
Do you?
Some of the decisions, Jerry, would make me think that at times.
They must have loved him coming out of the draft.
There was another name that's come up for across the leagues, Aziz Ojulari for the Giants. The Giants want a second-round pick as their GM thinks Joe Sheen thinks they can make the playoffs still. The Giants. So that's why they're asking for a lot.
I don't, but, you know.
I don't think anybody does.
I think as a GM, you can say whatever you want, I guess. How far back are they? I mean, what do they got, like 3-4 wins? They got more wins than the Bengals or the same amount?
Less.
They have 3 wins, right?
Oh, my God. They're 2-7.
Oh, never
Come
mind.
On,
How
Joe?
Are they making the playoffs?
Come on, Joe. Let's live in reality here.
They're like a top 5 pick then, right?
They got like a negative 60 point differential. Lost 4 games in a row.
Up next, there was one thing that didn't happen last night. We had seen it throughout the season, but we were both surprised by it. We'll tell you what that is, and we'll take a brief step away from the Chiefs as well. Something that doesn't make any sense in Major League Baseball as it relates to what the Royals accomplished.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Pushed last year.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.